Last time on Jerry Terrifying Reads Metal Gear Solid, Solid Snake infiltrated Shadow Moses Island. He made his way up an elevator and watched Liquid Snake take off in a Hind D. Also, Snake probably spent a lot of time flirting with Mei Ling. Hey, it's been a few months since I recorded one of these things. So come along as we read Chapter 5 of Metal Gear Solid. It was a straight shot across the heliport to the other side, except for two things. First, Snake counted three roaming guards, again wearing white camouflage uniforms. Second, lights on the ceiling had flicked on and produced a searchlight effect, with beams zigzagging haphazardly across the floor. As Snake studied the spotlight's patterns, he noticed an object on the helipad close to where the Hind D had sat. The light passed over it again, and Snake could discern that the object was a box. Was it worth the risk to see what it contained? Sure, it'll be fun. He counted the sweeps of the light's beam's crisscross pattern and determined that the cycle was repeated every 30 seconds. To get to the box on the helipad without being hit by a searchlight, he had to dart to the edge of the helipad and wait for the crisscross cycle to begin again. The drawback to that was that he would be in full view of the entire helipad. Then, at precisely 10 seconds into the cycle, most of the helipad would be in darkness, long enough for him to dash to the box, pick it up, and run left toward the western wall of the structure. But where were the guards? Two of them had moved out of sight. Snake could still see one standing at the north end of the space, next to a truck, some kind of cargo carrier. Okay, Snake wouldn't have to deal with him until the very end. The other two? Since he didn't spot them, Snake moved to a group of petroleum barrels, crouched, and scanned the room from a different perspective. There. A guard was standing in front of a double doorway on the left side of the room. That was the point to which Snake would have to run after grabbing the box on the helipad. Fine, he would deal with him when the time came. So where was the third guy? Snake waited a few seconds longer, but the man never appeared. Was getting the box still worth the risk? He could be anywhere. The light beams moved away from the edges of the helipad. It was now or never, or wait for the next cycle, which would take up too much time. Snake bolted across the floor and reached the helipad corner in 2 seconds. He crouched and willed himself to be invisible. Luckily, the dark snaking suit blended into the shadows surprisingly well. "You don't see me, you bastards." He remained perfectly still and counted the seconds as the cycle started over. Voices. Two men. The third soldier had joined the other man over to the left, where Snake needed to go. That stop was going to be a little more challenging than he originally had thought. The searchlight swung across the floor. Snake could still see the guard by the truck, smoking a cigarette. At least he wasn't moving. The beams crossed each other and moved away from the center. Snake made his move, sprinted onto the painted H, reached the box, and looked inside. Grenades. 3 chaff grenades. Snake scooped them up quickly, opened his empty pouch, and dropped them in. Time to move. He ran off the helipad toward the left, where the two guards stood directly in his path, some 20 feet away. They were talking and smoking cigarettes, and even though they were facing in his direction, so far they hadn't seen him. Snake picked up his running speed as the men's gaze finally focused on him. They had time only to open their mouths in shock as Snake jumped and collided with them like a bat out of hell. Both soldiers fell backward with Snake's arms locked around their necks, just below the chins. With as much force as he could muster, Snake landed on the floor, using the two guards' heads as cushions. The cracking sound on the concrete floor meant that their conversation was over. Snake twisted his head around and looked north. The guard by the truck was gone. Uh-oh. Snake grabbed the two soldiers by their fur-lined hoods and dragged them 8 feet to an alcove on the left side of the structure. The open double doors he had seen earlier apparently led to a storeroom of some kind. That could be worth a peek. A security camera slowly made an arc as it pivoted back and forth across the entrance. A surveillance camera? Time it just right, and he'd have it. Snake watched the camera move across his path. The second it turned away, he ran forward, dived through the double doors and into the room, performed a body roll, and landed on his feet, his SOCOM in hand. A fourth guard sat draped over a table with his hooded head in his arms. Snake froze. Was the man asleep? As if in answer, the guard snorted on an inhalation and moved his head, mumbled, and settled back onto his arms again. Snake stepped quietly to the side of the storeroom to examine the boxes on display. Much of it was food supplies, nothing that might be of use. It appeared the mice had gotten into some of the boxes of grain. There were holes in some of the lower cartons, and grain had spilled over the floor. He moved to the west wall and hugged it, and then slowly stepped around the room. Eventually, he was positioned 4 feet behind a sleeping guard at the table. The man snored loudly and woke himself up. His head rose to the level where Snake wanted it. "Sounds like you've got sleep apnea," Snake said. "Better get that checked out." As the guard turned his head to see who had spoken, Snake reached out, grabbed the man's skull through the hood, and twisted it all the way around. The snap sounded like a slap. Snake gently laid the man back down onto the table and arranged the head and arms as they had been when the guard had been sleeping. He then moved to the north side of the storeroom and looked at the shelves. "Colonel, I found a pair of thermal goggles. It was Armtex Model A, reliable and effective heat-sensing stealth equipment." Snake picked them up and placed them in the pouch.
"Hello, Snake. This is Natasha Romanenko."
"Oh yeah, the nuclear specialist. How's sunny California?"
"Just fine, except it's night here now. I'm glad you found the thermal goggles. You know, they work by thermal imaging instead of amplifying light like night vision goggles. They'll work just as well in complete darkness. Not only that, they can penetrate optic stealth systems. You should be able to spot Claymore mines, too."
"Well, thanks, Natasha, but I knew all that."
"Oh, sorry. I guess maybe I'll just stay quiet unless you have a question about something. Da?"
"Da."
"They asked me to participate in this operation as a supervisor from the Nuclear Energy Search Team. I was happy to accept. We must not allow terrorists to get their hands on nuclear weapons of any kind. I hope I can help you stop them."
"I'll be sure to give you a buzz if I need you, Natasha," Snake said, and then ended the transmission.
He quickly scanned the rest of the shelves and boxes and was tempted to take a box of shells for an M9, but decided against it. He had spent enough time in the helipad already. Snake looked out of the storeroom, kept an eye on the surveillance camera, waited for it to turn away from him, and then bolted out and across the floor to a crate. He flattened his back against it and inched along the edge. All clear. Snake slipped to the next crate, one that was parallel with the trucks. The vehicle was an M548 full-tracked cargo carrier. It would be interesting to take a look under the canopy to see what treasures he might find, but Snake didn't have a fix on the last guard's location. He waited a few precious seconds and listened carefully. He heard footsteps on the right side of the room. He crouched and saw the soldier walking around a crate, returning to his position by the truck. Snake opened the pouch, removed the chaff grenade, released the safety pin, and tossed the explosive over the top of the crate so that it would land and roll over to the right wall. 5 seconds later, the device exploded, sending microscopic metal shards into the air around it. Chaff grenades were not particularly incendiary, and their damage was slight. The main use were jamming enemy sensory systems and creating diversions. The guard, surprised by the noise, turned toward the right wall. He called his colleagues by their names, and when he didn't receive a reply, walked cautiously toward the sound of the explosion with his assault rifle readied. As soon as he was around the crate and not in sight, Snake ran to the cargo carrier and crouched behind its left side. He took the time to lift a corner of the canopy and saw that the truck bed was full of cartons. One was open, and it contained more chaff grenades. Snake reached in, grabbed two, and thrust them into his pouch. He then turned toward the north wall. Closed steel doors led to the next part of the facility, and Snake doubted that merely waltzing through them would be very safe. There was, however, a ventilation duct on the wall next to the doors. It was covered by a simple mesh grating that he could pry off easily with his fingers. That was his next port of call, he thought, but he didn't want the remaining guard to find his incapacitated buddies. "Over here," he called. The guard acknowledged him, thinking the voice he had heard was that of one of his colleagues. Snake heard the sound of the man's boots running toward the truck, so he lay prone and rolled under the truck. The man, confused that no one was there, called the names of his comrades. Snake emerged from under the other side of the truck, stood, and casually crept behind him. This time, Snake reached around the soldier and grabbed the man's assault rifle with both hands.
He pulled the weapon laterally into the guard's neck and applied continuous pressure until he went limp. Snake opened the passenger side of the truck and unceremoniously stuffed the body into the seat. He skirted to the grating and pulled it off with his gloved hands. The duct was big enough for him to worm inside, but it was a tight fit. For illumination, he flicked on a penlight that was built into his shoulder padding. Now it was just a matter of crawling through the channel to its other end. He dragged himself along the claustrophobic metal tunnel, happy to get out of the cold. Even though the heliport wasn't enclosed with a sliding roof, the temperature in the place was almost as low as it was outdoors. Once he was in the facility proper, the central heat would be on.
"How are you doing, Snake?" Campbell asked. Snake grunted in reply. "There's mouse shit in here."
He heard the women giggle. "It's not funny."
"Snake," Campbell said, "if that's the worst of your problems, then you've got it easy."
Snake continued to crawl until he reached a grating flat on the duct floor. He peered through the mesh into what appeared to be a large area for storing heavy equipment. In fact, he could discern the black end of the treads of an armored tank.
"An Abrams," he said.
"What?"
"Colonel, they've got an Abrams tank in here."
"That's right, Snake, they have two. Our intelligence reports that you're approaching a hangar for Shadow Moses's armored vehicles, tank parts, and we think ammunition."
"Good to know, Colonel, but at the moment I've got all I..."
"Hold it." Two guards appeared on a catwalk directly beneath him, maybe 5 feet below the bottom of the duct. Snake caught a bit of their conversation as they walked by.
"The shaft cleaning. They're going to spray for mice," one said.
"So what did you do with them?"
"The DARPA guy? He was moved to the cell in the first floor basement, next to the woman.
I hear she's feisty. What I wouldn't give to..." And they were gone.
"Woman? Meryl Silverberg, perhaps?" "Colonel, I know where the DARPA chief Anderson is," Snake said. "And I think I know where your niece is, too."
Snake continued the lateral journey through the duct until he came to a juncture going down. He wasn't sure how far it went, but there was no place else to go. He straightened his arms and used isometric pressure to lower himself with his back sliding along the side of the duct. The strain on his shoulders and knees was tremendous, but he had practiced this maneuver many times at Foxhound's obstacle course. Eventually, he came to another ventilation grate. He used his legs and back to wedge himself against the sides of the duct so that he could rest for a moment and look out. The same two guards apparently had come down a set of stairs and were standing 7 feet away from the vent, leaning against a rail.
"Been put on alert."
"Why?"
"I heard something about an intruder. He's already done 3 sentries, and they say he's using stealth. The security detail's been doubled. Come on."
They moved away and continued along the catwalk out of Snake's sight.
"An intruder? Stealth? Colonel, there's another intruder here. Unless they're talking about me, then things just got a lot more complicated."
"Did you hide the guards you neutralized?"
"Yes, sir, but that doesn't mean they can't be found."
Then they may be on to you."
"But I've done more than 3 sentries.
"Somehow, Colonel, I don't think so."
"I think it's somebody else they're talking about. Never mind, I'm going on."
He lifted his torso off the back of the duct and continued the spider crawl all the way to the blessed bottom, which finally appeared after several minutes of spine-breaking exertion. The vertical duct ended in a T, with passages going off in opposite directions. Which way to go? Heads or tails? To help answer his question, a scratching, scurrying sound grew near.
"What the?"
A small herd of brown mice skittered in from his left, ran around his feet, and continued into the duct to his right. When they were gone, Snake muttered,
"Where there's fire, boys,"
and figured that the rodents knew where they were going. He went right.
"Snake, we've got you tracked very near the hangar,"
Mei Ling announced.
"There should be a vent opening in a few yards."
"I see it."
Snake slowed his crawl and focused on staying silent. It was a safe bet that human beings stood just beyond the grating. They might not take kindly to a stranger caught crawling out of their air duct. He approached the grating and looked through the dirty mesh. It emptied onto the floor of the hangar. Although the place was big enough to house a small airplane, dominating the floor space were 2 Abrams tanks. Work lights on the ceiling illuminated the hangar well enough that a figure, even one dressed in black, might be spotted darting across the floor.
There were no guards in sight, but Snake could hear the two men talking not far away. He wasn't sure if they could see the vent. Nevertheless, he gently snapped the grill out of its sockets, carefully tilted it, and brought it inside the duct. He then dared to poke his head out of the metal shaft. The Duke guard stood on a second-level catwalk to his right. There was no sign of men on the ground floor, but that didn't mean there weren't any. Snake thought it best to play it safe and create a diversion so that he could slip out of the vent unnoticed. He reached into the pouch and removed a single .45 caliber cartridge from his supply of ammunition and snaked his way out halfway onto the floor. Lying on his back, he flung the bullet into the air, aiming over the nearest Abrams tank. He heard it hit the floor on the other side of the hangar, but the guards didn't notice because of the ambient noise in the space. He hated to use another cartridge, but he had no choice. This time he aimed for the catwalk on the left side of the hangar, directly opposite the guards. Once again on his back, Snake flung the shell hard and hit the left wall. This time the cartridge bounced onto the catwalk, clanging as it fell. The two guards looked towards the noise, mumbled something, and split up. One proceeded to walk to the western side of the hangar via the north end catwalk, and the other man went the southern route, which would take him directly over Snake's head. Snake waited until he heard the boots tromping above him, and then slipped completely out of the duct, darted to the center of the floor, and took cover on the right side of the nearest Abrams. From there, he could see the freight elevator on the eastern wall. He couldn't risk running for it because it was in plain view of the guards on the catwalk. Snake cursed to himself and eyed his surroundings for another alternative. 15 feet to the southwest was a steel flight of stairs that led to the second-level catwalk. He reached into his pouch, grasped another shell, and threw it as hard as he could toward the north end of the hangar. The bullet clanged against the second Abrams tank. The two guards quickly hurried to investigate, their backs now turned to Snake. He used the opportunity to sprint to the staircase and ascend with the quiet, light touch of the feline species. Up there, the lighting was less intense. Shadows were Snake's friends, so he embraced them one by one as he traveled along the catwalk until he was crouched on the same side as the guards. They were standing and looking over the rail, studying the area around the second Abrams. Snake stooped to all fours once again so that he could crawl silently along the catwalk, a trick Master Miller had taught him. Footsteps on the metal latticework made too much noise. Literally becoming cat was the only way to surprise a target in such a setting. When he was approximately 30 feet away from the men, Snake lay prone on the catwalk, reached into his pocket on the calf of his uniform, and removed the SOCOM's sound suppressor. He screwed it onto the barrel, used both hands to aim the weapon, and fired a round at one of the guards. The recoil felt good. It had been too long since he had used the weapon on assignment. Shooting snowballs at his wilderness cabin was good for practice, but nothing took the place of a living target. The guards flinched slightly as if they had just been bitten by a nasty bug, and the other man seemed confused about why his partner was wobbling on his feet. Then, as soon as the wounded man began to drop, Snake was able to get a clear shot at the second man. The gun jerked in his hand again. Simultaneously, the first man crumbled onto the catwalk as the second guard wrenched violently, staggered against the rail, and then careened over it. His body fell 30 feet onto the concrete floor with a hard ka-plump. Snake twisted his head back and forth, eyeing the entire hangar for signs of movement. No one else was inside. He stood, ran back to the staircase, and descended to the floor. He could leave the first corpse on the catwalk since it was out of sight, but he had to get rid of the second guy. Snake crossed the space, picked up the man by his ankles, and dragged him to the side of the room near a set of trash barrels with lids. He removed one lid, heaved the man up and over, and secured the lid on top of him. The storeroom was directly to the right, but the doors were protected by a security keypad.
"Colonel, do you guys have any security access codes for me?"
"Negative, Snake. You'll have to pick those up from somewhere or someone."
Snake didn't feel like trying to guess a code from infinite mathematical possibilities, so he turned his back onto the locked treasure trove and ran to the freight elevator. He pressed the button for B1 and said,
"Colonel, I'm on my way to the first floor basement. The show's just getting started."
And that was Chapter 5 of Metal Gear Solid.
I was not prepared for Natasha Romanenko's voice. I tried to do my best Natasha from Boris and Natasha of Rocky and Bullwinkle fame. That didn't really pan out too well. So hopefully I don't have to do a lot of Natasha
voicing, and I liked the doofy generic voices I randomly picked for the guards. I did that all in one take, and just sort of ran with it, and yeah. So that was Chapter 5 of Jerry Terrifying Reads, Metal Gear Solid.